Okay, so it is everything post-weaning. It is not everything from birth to harvest. Okay, so sure, if you or your customers are retaining ownership on some cattle, selling them on a high quality grade grid, this is your number, and it does a whale of a job. Okay, but just be aware that I think maybe it's been applied in some instances where it might not have been appropriate before. Does that make sense? Okay, good. Let's talk about accuracy now, shall we? How many of you have looked at the accuracy and possible change value table recently? It used to be on the inside front cover of the printed sire summaries. It's now out there on the web. You can still find it. How many of you look at accuracy values when you're buying a bull or when you're selling or when you're buying females? Do you glance at those ever? They're the number right under the EPD. I'm getting some head nods. Okay, a few. I want to talk with you about accuracy for just a minute. So this table has all of the EPDs across the top, and I apologize, I had to cut the carcass traits off so I could even begin to fit it on the slide, but they're out there, would be keep going to the right. And then in the first left column, we have everything from an accuracy of 0.05, that's a pedigree estimate EPD, up to 0.95 over here. So I'm going to use an example, again, to show you why accuracy is important. We have two bulls. I love Bull A and Bull B. Okay, they're my favorite. They both have a birth weight EPD of 1.8. Okay, the difference is Bull A's accuracy on his EPD is a 0.05. It means the only thing we know about this bull is what his sire's birth weight EPD is and what his dam's birth weight EPD is. That's all we know. Okay, Bull B, on the other hand, he's still got that 1.8 birth weight EPD, but it has an accuracy of 0.8, meaning not only do we know his pedigree, we probably know something about his own birth weight, he may have a genomic test on board, and more importantly, he probably has birth weights that are reported on a bunch of his calves. Okay, so 0.8. So if I were to go back to this table and go to the birth weight column and look at the number in the 0.05 box and look at the number in the 0.8 box, this is what you would see. You would see that the possible change value for Bull A is 2.49 and the possible change value for Bull B is 0.53. Okay, so what? What does that mean? Let me show you how to use it. Okay, Bull A, our low ACK bull, we take his 1.8 birth weight EPD and we add to it and subtract from it that number we found in the box, that 2.49. It gives us a range. Okay, so 1.8 minus 2.49 is almost minus 0.7. And then 1.8 plus 2.49 is almost 4.3. So what does that mean? It means I'm pretty doggone sure when he's a proven bull, his birth weight EPD is going to be somewhere between minus 0.7 and 4.3. Okay, in fact, I'm 68% sure that when he's a proven bull, his birth weight EPD is going to be somewhere between minus 0.7 and 4.3. It's a big range, isn't it? Okay, it's a big range. Now let's look at this guy, Bull B. Do the same thing. Take his EPD, 1.8, and add to it and subtract from it that number that was in the box. Now, we're pretty sure when all is said and done, if he's still alive and having calves, and when his EPD gets as accurate as it's going to get, it's going to be between 1.3 and 2.3. Okay? Does accuracy make sense now? Why accuracy is important? Okay? How do we get more accuracy? How do we make that accuracy number go up? I told you what a pedigree estimate EPD is. It's just you take the sire's EPD, the dam's EPD, half the sire's EPD, half the dam's EPD, add them together, and you've got a pedigree estimate EPD. We put an accuracy of 0.05 on it. How do I make that go up, that accuracy? Okay, so you can, their own performance data, so you can submit an actual birth weight or actual weaning weight on that animal itself. And when you submit their own performance data, assuming it comes from a proper contemporary group, you will probably see their EPD move a bit. And you'll see the accuracy go up a bit, okay? When we really see the big accuracy is what you just said down here in the front row, have some calves. I mean, there is no better indicator for an animal's genetic worth as a parent for a specific trait, which is what an EPD is, than to actually have calves on the ground, okay? That takes a while in some cases, doesn't it, for some traits to have calves where you can measure those traits for them. So the really cool thing is that in addition to pedigree, which has always gone into EPD, in addition to an animal's own performance data and their progeny data, you now have at your disposal genomic tests that can increase the accuracy of those EPDs the day they're born, if you want to. I mean, you can pull blood on a baby calf, okay? And they give you the same amount of information as if those animals have already had, depending on the trait, between 8 and about 20 calves, okay? So those are really powerful tools. We are currently working with Zoetis and their HD50K test, which I'm sure you're all familiar with. It is available, and it is one that is genomically enhancing our EPDs. This one may be a newer one to some of you. We retired the Igenity profile from the Angus world back in May because GeneSeq, their parent company, came out with a high-density test nearly comparable to the HD50K. In fact, it is comparable to the HD50K for everything except calving ease. Okay? So you can choose either of those. They're going to influence your EPDs in the same manner. You will see accuracy move in the same manner for all of the traits except calving ease. Okay? They cost the same amount. Both of them include parentage. There are a couple of things. If you choose to do the Zoetis HD50K and your commercial customers or you decide that you want to do GeneMax on commercial cattle, we can trace the sire of those GeneMax tested calves if the sires have been 50K tested, okay? The GeneSeq test, on the other hand, does not have that option, but they do offer some discounts on the genetic conditions if you order the profile through them, okay? The other difference between the two tests is that the Zoetis test is explaining almost 40% of the genetic variation for calving ease direct, whereas the GeneSeq test is just about 12. So there is a difference there on those. All right. So that's how it stands today. It may change, and we know we go through recalibration occasionally. But as things stand today, that's where the tests are lining up. Here's the slide that I wanted to show you, depending on traits. So here's all the traits that are genomically enhanced. You'll notice the only one missing is heifer preg at this point. And we are working diligently to genomically enhance that test. It should be happening soon. Look in this column, progeny equivalence. So how many calves would you have to submit performance data on to get the accuracy that you get from the genomics? And so for calving ease on the HD50K Zoetis test, it would be 21. Okay, 21. So you'd have to breed and have calving ease, calving scores on 21 first calf heifers bred to that bull to get that accuracy. Something like, let's go down here to the carcass traits. It's between 6 and 16, and that's actual carcass data, not ultrasound. If you use ultrasound, those would be closer to 40. You'd have to ultrasound 40 of their calves to get that level of accuracy. Okay. So there are some tools at your disposal that can help jumpstart that accuracy that we were talking about, but all of those tried and true pieces that you have done for so long are still really, really important. We still need performance data collected. It's still a really, really crucial component in adding accuracy and achieving those high accuracy levels. In addition, it is crucially important to be able to keep making sure that the genomics is still working and still doing what it's supposed to do. We have to have performance data to compare that DNA back to keep the genomics a powerful selection tool for you. Okay? Questions on the purebred side so far? Yes?
Can you continue to ultrasound?
Yeah, so the question was, would you continue to ultrasound? And I get that question almost everywhere I go. And the answer is, if you have small contemporary groups, probably not. If you have large contemporary groups, that is still a valuable source of information. Small contemporary groups, you won't see much movement in the EPDs or much accuracy boost from the ultrasound piece. And plus, if you're doing small contemporary groups, usually the cost per head just to get a tech there is maybe not as economical as it would be in larger contemporary groups, but the information is still important, and it still feeds into the EPDs if that's something that you choose to do. Other questions I can answer with regards to any of those topics we've talked about so far? Okay, one, yes, yes, Steve, yeah.
Mm-hmm. That's what it said up there on the slide.
Yeah.
But you referred to it as a genetic test or a test for a genetic defect.
Yeah, the two terms get interchanged.
What the difference is in the two terms?
Yeah, I think genetic condition sounds nicer, doesn't it? They get used interchangeably, and I'm guilty of that as anybody. I hear them called genetic defects. I hear them called genetic conditions. I think... There's not really a...
Well, does that mean that we're going to go back and change on our papers all of the genetic defects to genetic conditions?
I don't think there's any... That would be an error on my part for not having the wording the same on the slide as it is on the papers.
Well, is genetic condition politically correct? Is that what you're saying today?
I don't know if there's a perception of that or not. I use the two interchangeably. I say defect a lot. Genetic defect is easier to say than genetic condition. I hear some people use the word genetic condition. I think it depends on who you're talking to. What else can I answer? Okay. Mark McCauley would not forgive me if I didn't at least mention this to you all while I'm here. So I do want to talk about, in the past, most of the genetic selection tools that we have developed have really been emphasized on the purebred side. The genetic tests have been for purebred cattle. But because you guys have been so outstanding at the uptake on this technology on the HD50K side, it has allowed us to develop a test for your customers. So this is for commercial users of Angus Genetics. And this is actually certified Angus Beef's test. They are the marketers behind it, and it is theirs. AGI, we just sort of do the science and receive the samples and deliver results. And then our partners that are Zoetis are who do the genotyping. So we send the samples to them. They extract the DNA. They send the genotypes back to us at AGI, and then we compute and deliver the results to your commercial customers. So it's called GeneMax. As I've said, it is a DNA test for commercial cattlemen, for marbling and post-weaning gain. Okay, I get that it's two traits, marbling and post-weaning gain. Okay, marbling, think about certified Angus beef here. They are on target to have another record year, but from what I understand, they could sell more certified Angus beef if we had it. Keeping that supply is of crucial importance to them. The number one reason why black-headed cattle don't qualify for CAB is because they don't have enough marbling. So marbling was something that had to be in there. And we know that we still gain. We still make our money on gain. Cattle still have to gain to be profitable in the feed yard. And so that was another trait that was crucially important to them. Okay, high percentage Angus cattle. It was developed actually to be used on 3/4 or above, so 75% or above. We have seen some efficacy lower than that as well. But high percentage Angus commercial cattle. Primarily, we're seeing it being used in replacement heifers at this point. We've had a little bit of dabbling with it on the feeder cattle side, but most of the use so far has been either in marketing or selecting replacement heifers, or as a decision-making tool on replacement heifers. And so let me show you what the results look like. They're delivered in a PDF file, or your commercial customers, if they have bought and transferred registered Angus bull, they do have a member code. They may not know that they have one, but they can access this via AAA login. We will set up a password for them, and so they can log in and see their results there as well. So this is all just tag number. These were heifers that were tested. You see those are BIR numbers. They're not registered cattle. And then they get a GeneMax score. And that is just the economically weighted components of marbling and post-weaning gain. We combine them into one nice little score that goes from 1 to 100. 1 to 99, actually. We don't give anybody a perfect score. Okay, 99. 99 is the best. Okay. They also get marbling and gain on a 1 to 5 scale, 5 being the best genetics for those two component traits and 1 being then the other end of the scale. A really awesome feature of this that I alluded to when I was talking about the HD50K is that if you are using bulls that have been 50K tested, and most AI sires have, and then you test their heifer calves, we can tell you which bull sired which of the heifers. Okay, and that's what you see in this column over here where it says most likely sire. All right, so that's what the results look like. I wanted to share with you an example of how this had been used. I said it had been used as a selection tool, as a decision tool, as a marketing tool. And so we actually had the opportunity to work with a JBS Five Rivers yard in Colorado, their Cooner yard, which has typically been their natural feed yard. They had some bunk space available and decided to try their hand at developing some heifers. Okay, and so they procured almost 4,000 head of heifers from various ranches across the West. They tested them all. And in the end, they used GeneMax along with performance and phenotype to select which of those heifers they were going to keep. They had to have at least a 50 for their GeneMax score. And they ended up keeping about 39% of the heifers. You can see those up here that were selected. So they had to have 50 or above. And then the ones that they did not choose to become heifers, they will, of course, then put into the feed yard, feed those. We'll have closeout data, carcass data on those heifers. Okay. So they used it as a selection tool. 50 was their cutoff. They had to have at least a 50 and then meet some performance and phenotype requirements in order to be eligible to become a replacement heifer. They're going to AI these heifers, and they should be selling them anytime now this spring. Another cool feature is Kara Wilson with, she's Kara Lee now, not Wilson. Kara talked to their manager. I said, Kara, is there any chance we can figure out if there are any AI-sired heifers in that group? And so she went back and talked to Nolan. And sure enough, some of the people that he'd bought heifers from had provided him that information. You know, we AI'd to these bulls. And so I was able to go back, plug in the reg number for those bulls, run their HD50K genotypes against the GeneMax on the heifers, and here's what we found. We found almost 150 in-focus daughters in that group, some final answers, some roundups, some image makers. You go on down the list there, okay? And it turns out that there was about 60% of those that were AI sired they end up keeping. They were in the keeper pen. So for the manager, that was an exciting thing for him because he said now instead of just having a commercial Angus heifer to sell, I have 100 in-focus daughters, and I sure think those will be worth more than just kind of a nondescript commercial Angus heifer. So that was, in addition to that marketing piece, they also used this information when they went to AI these heifers. There may be some bulls that are more appropriate to use in each of these cases, knowing that you have a final answer, knowing that you have an in focus. They use the information in that way. So a selection tool, a marketing tool, a decision-making tool on the GeneMax side for your commercial Angus customers. Okay? Can I answer any questions on that, or if you thought of anything about the other material that you might like to ask at this point? Yes.
What was your definition of a small herd?
A small contemporary group? Yeah, well, you know, in order to, you have to have at least a contemporary group of two, right? And if you get less than, you know, I hate to give hard numbers, but, you know, if you're working in those 5 and 10 area on the ultrasound side, you don't see a lot of bumps sometimes. You can't get enough calves from each sire for there to be a relative group to make a huge difference on the accuracy piece. So keep that in mind, you know, because you may have a contemporary group of 10, but there might only be one calf from this bull and two from this bull. And so, you know, is that really a representative sample of that bull's calves? So that's that, and that's how it relates to how the accuracy works when we run the NCE. Oh, yes.
If you're going to use the genomic enhanced
calves,
do you have to register that calf first? The way you register the one that's either not registered at all?
So you will not get genomic enhanced EPDs on an animal until they're registered unless you were involved in the Maternal Plus program. So we don't calculate EPDs on VIR calves. Unless you are in the Maternal Plus program, which I can talk with you about, but if you're involved in Maternal Plus, then you will get a birth weight, weaning weight, and CED, EPD on your calves before you register them. Yeah, so there are no EPDs calculated on VIR animals, except for that one exception. What else? Did you, I saw, yes. Yep. Yeah, that's an interesting question. So remember those these 1 to 5s are big buckets, right? So this animal was probably top of the 5s, like top 1%, and may have been almost a 5 there. Okay, so those so you kind of have to look at the GeneMax score and those together, and it'll give you an idea. Whereas you're looking, you know, maybe this animal was more middle of the road on the 4, perhaps, and not as high into that 4 category. So remember those 1 to 5 buckets, and that's something that's tough to explain sometimes. They're big 20 percentile buckets, okay, 20%, 20%, 20%. So that's where we get into some confusion on those every now and then, I understand. Did I see a hand over here? Yes. Yeah.
Gene seek.
Uh-huh. Yes.
How would a producer make a decision on what product?
Yeah, so how do you decide? Because, you know, you only need one, because they're both 50Ks. And so, you know, I know there's some of you in the audience are probably Zoetis people. You like Zoetis. You like your Zoetis rep. You like your GeneSeq rep. You may make your decision that way. You may make your decision on turnaround time. Sometimes one of the labs is quicker than the other. It may be that the genetic conditions, that you would like a discount on your genetic conditions and your genetic defects. Then you would choose to go with the GeneSeq side. It may be that you've got some commercial breeders going to start doing GeneMax, and you really want them to be able to use that sire match part. Well, then you better go with the 50K side. So there's admittedly some give and take there, but not nearly like there used to be. Not nearly like there used to be. Yes.
On the raw data coming from the actual profiling of the genomics, you know, one being very good or high.
Yeah.
Yes,
so if you are that what he's asking about are the 1 to 100 percentile ranks that you get when you do a genomic profile test. We give those to you mostly as an FYI. So when that genomics goes into your EPD and it moves, you know why it moved the way it did. But if you are using it for a selection tool or your customers are using it for a selection tool, use the EPD. Okay? And why do I say that? It's because the EPD has everything in it. The genomics are in it. Everything we know about the animal's pedigree is in it. Its own performance data are in it. Everything is in the EPD. And the genomics are properly weighted. If you were to use the EPD and the genomic percentile rank both, you would be overweighting the genomics in your selection process.
But is the one comparable?
Across? No. Well, so if you're comparing Zoetis to GeneSeq, you mean?
No, if I just use Zoetis.
Yeah. Yeah, it means they're in the top 1% of the animals that were used in that calibration. So at this point, the Zoetis calibration was trained on just a scotch over, or about 14,000 animals. So of that 14,000 animals, a 1 means it was in the top 1% of that 14,000 animals. Okay? Compare that to an EPD that's in the top 1%. That's in the top 1% of millions of animals. So So the 1% on an EPD is not comparable to 1% on genomics. They're not. They're different pools of animals, different sizes of animals. So yeah. So the take home message here is use the EPD, okay? And that 1% on the genomics is kind of an FYI for you, so that you know where they ranked in that particular calibration and if your EPD is likely to move. We're working on it right now. It will be released on the big biannual turn that comes in December. So we are finishing up the research on that at this point. Yes. Okay. What else?
Did you say December? Like just before
Denver? We are doing it on the biannual this year. So when we print the new SIRE summaries, in other words. So it won't be the SIRE summary comes out and everything's wrong. We won't do that again. Yeah. No, last year we intended to do that last year, but the things rolled more slowly doing it the first time than we'd anticipated. But we're kind of pros at it now, so we're expecting it to roll much more smoothly. What else can I answer?
As far as numbers, do you have a feel on what the number
might look like? How many animals will be in that calibration? There will be close to 30,000 animals in that calibration, so we've doubled. Mm-hmm. Yep. What else? Wonderful questions. Thank you for your attention. I will be around all week, so if you have some comments or things, please come chat. And thanks for having me. I appreciate it.